Are you ready to get informed and inspired? This is the Homeschool Hope Podcast, where you are introduced to the people and the products to equip you for your homeschooling journey. Whether you are a veteran homeschooler, are just getting started, or haven't even started yet, this show will give you the hope in the future of home education.
Episode 006 of the Homeschool Hope Podcast. The affiliate focus for today is Covenant Eyes. If your family is like mine, the internet is an invaluable resource for your home school. You probably have multiple devices used by all your kids for various parts of their home school in addition to all the other activities that they do on their own. As homeschoolers, you're also hoping to protect your kids from some of the negative influences of government schools and the environments. It doesn't make any sense then to let your kids be in danger of unprotected use of the internet. That's why I use in our home and why I recommend for your home Covenant Eyes. It will provide accountability for all your electronic devices and the users of them. So if you're concerned about protecting your family online, then check out Covenant Eyes on the affiliate banner on the right column of the website or in the show notes. And if you click on either one of those, you get 1 month free by using my banners. So check out Covenant Eyes.
Hey, everyone. This is Steve Donahue. I'm really excited about our show today because I have a special guest with us, John Wilkerson. And John combines his professional experience in the computer industry with 16 years of homeschooling seven children to give parents easy-to-understand advice on application of technology in their homes. We're going to talk about his Wired Homeschool podcast here in a little bit, but that's how I got introduced to him. I love that show, and I'm sure he'll be able to tell you a little bit more about that as we go along. He's been married to Lisa for 16 years, and together they have seven children. The oldest has graduated from homeschooling, and the other six continue to keep them very busy. And in addition to doing the Wired Homeschool and some of the other things that he does, he loves gadgets and geeky things like Star Wars, Doctor Who, and bacon. So you might have to explain that a little bit. But welcome, John. I appreciate you taking your time to be with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve.
So why don't we get started, first of all, just by you expanding a little bit more on what I just mentioned about you and your family and a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, sure. So we've got seven kids ranging from age 7 up to 20. Our oldest is a junior in college right now. So next year we get to go to a college graduation. And between those two, I've got two teenage daughters that are 15 and 13. And then I've got two sons who are 11 and 10. And then I have also a 9-year-old daughter and, of course, my 7-year-old son. So we're pretty busy when it comes to the homeschooling side of things. You know, my wife, Lisa, does most of the homeschooling, and I help out when I can. We're fortunate in that Lisa is actually a certified teacher here in New York, and that was her profession before we got married.
I'm not familiar with the New York laws. Is that a requirement up in New York?
It is not a requirement. No.
Okay.
No. But it has in the past helped us out because it does give her kind of a stronger foot to stand on with the superintendents, because depending on the school district you're in here in New York, the regulations don't necessarily vary, but there is some leeway that's given to the superintendents mm-hmm. on what they can require as far as testing and things like that. You know, within the regulations. But the fact that she is a certified teacher has helped us out in the past. And so, I mean, I've been in IT for, oh gosh, as long as I can remember, since the 90s, since the early 90s, I've been in IT. So my dad was in IT in the Army, and so that's how I got interested in computers and things like that. And we moved around a lot. I got to see quite a bit of the world, and Europe mostly as far as traveling. But we have just homeschooling was something we were always going to do when we got married. And my wife had an older sibling that had homeschooled. And so she was, you know, excited to do that as well. So it's been a wonderful and exciting adventure for us. So, you know, and we really, we're really blessed to have the opportunity to train up our children in academic excellence.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you already mentioned it a little bit, but what were some of the reasons why you wanted to homeschool?
Well, primarily for us, it was academic excellence. The fact that we're able to also impart our morals without having to unlearn things that they learn in the public school is certainly a benefit of that. But primarily, it was for academic excellence.
Right. Okay. Very good. Well, tell me about maybe a struggle that you have had in your homeschooling journey. I'm sure you've ran into a few speed bumps, but tell me about one of them.
Yeah, there have been some speed bumps. I think probably the biggest one that I can recall is when we had several young children, and then Lisa's trying to educate the older children as well, and just finding the time, because at one point we had three kids in diapers, and when you have three kids in diapers, it's kind of hard to also homeschool.
And keep your a quiet house. Well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think I would say that probably has been the biggest struggle. We have some of our kids, we've had to approach certain topics and get creative with those topics for them. But I don't think that was really as big a struggle as when, you know, Lisa was really pretty much running ragged.
So how did you handle that? Just let time take its course and they got older?
Time take its course, because the kids grow up eventually, and believe it or not, if you do the minimum that you need to homeschool your kids, it's a lot more, especially right. Because you're giving them personal attention. It's equivalent, if not more, than what they're getting in public schools. One of the things that Lisa really noticed when she was a teacher was the amount of time that was wasted in the public school system, because you got roll call and you got all this other stuff, that transitioning between classes and dealing with disciplinary issues, waiting in lines. And there's so much time that's wasted throughout the school day. And the great thing about homeschooling is you can condense that all into, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day instead of 6 or 7 hours a day.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So to the young homeschooling family out there that has three kids in diapers and they're trying to train the one, you're going to tell them, just relax, it'll pass.
Absolutely. Hang in there, relax, and get a – the other thing, too, that I think is real important, especially with when you have the younger kids in the house, is if you can set up some kind of schedule, even when they're infants – if you can get them on some kind of schedule, because children like routine, and it'll be in those times where, okay, all the younger kids are going to have quiet time, whether that's taking a nap or it's just playing quietly in their room. So you can get 30 minutes to sit down with the older child, that can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the dads, you know, maybe dad comes home in the evening and pitches in and helps and teaches a lesson or two or grades some papers or whatever it is. I think it's really
important. Or just takes the kids so that the mom can have a break.
Exactly. I think it's really important, and we're starting to see this more, although earlier we noticed in our homeschooling, mostly what dads did was open the wallet. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's not a dad that homeschools, that's involved in homeschooling.
Yep.
It's important, but the best way is really to support your wife, whether that means doing some dishes or doing some laundry or helping with the actual schooling, not necessarily because your wife can't do it, but because, you know, many hands make a burden much lighter.
Light work,
yeah. So we're starting to see more where the dads are really getting involved, and maybe they teach one or two subjects, or maybe they do something in the evening to help with one of the kids. And you know, that's a lot of what I do, and it's great that she can go and take off and say, here's a few things that the kids need done, and just explain it to them. I mean, fortunately, mm-hmm. we're at the point now where most of our kids, we can sit down and say, here's what we need you to do, and they'll do it. The younger ones still need a little bit more direction. But, you know, for my 10-year-old up, we can pretty much hand them an assignment. And, I mean, they know how to read. So all we have to do is answer their questions about the assignment. So
yeah, exactly. I found that, too. In fact, I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but particularly my boys, as they get to be teenagers, they really need their dad to be doing a lot of the instruction and the discipleship and not their mom. And so I've seen that of a big need. And so as mine get older, I'm having to step up even more, which is good. I wished I would have stepped up earlier. So part of this podcast that I'm doing is actually to try to make me learn more and get back, get into the group and learn these things. So that's great. Let's look at the other side of the spectrum now. Tell me something that your family has been able to do because you've homeschooled, or a success story of one of your kids or something like that, that would be able to give some inspiration to somebody out there that's looking to homeschool.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we got to do, and this was years ago when we had fewer kids, we can't do it so much now because it's a little bit more expensive to do this. But since we live in New York, February, by the time February rolls around, you forget what the sun looks like. And so early on, I mean, we went to Florida. I got to go to the Daytona 500 and you know, that's in February. We visited my dad in February. We visited my mother in February who live in the South. So we were able to just, you know, take off and go on vacation when most people normally aren't going on vacation, which meant we weren't waiting in line to go to a museum. I remember when we drove back from Florida, and we just took our time coming back because we didn't have to be back by a certain time. And so we would stop in a town and just stay overnight there. Oh, this town looks interesting. Oh, this town has a science center that might be fun to check out. And so we did those things. We were able to take our time traveling, and not only take our time traveling, but also make the trip educational as well. I mean, not that you can't do that if your kids are in public school. You certainly can make a trip educational, but because you're limited to saying, oh, we have to be back by this certain time, you can't take as much time as you need and really provide the amount of enrichment that you can as a homeschooler. You know, I see these families who are in RVs right now traveling all over the country and homeschooling, and I think, man, that would be great. But yeah, my wife likes a permanent address,
a home base. Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You know, I think about you, traveling around and things like that during off season hours and things like that. And, you know, it just makes me think about the pioneers in homeschooling who had to hide their kids really from government authorities for fear that they would be taken away because homeschooling wasn't yet legal, much less known, you know. Of course, now everybody knows somebody that homeschools, and so if you're out and about during school hours and you're not in school or whatever, you just say, oh, we're homeschooling, everything, oh, everybody's fine with it. But that was not always the case, and so we can do that now with Blessing. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you do for the homeschooling community. I have heard of your the Wired Homeschool podcast. In fact, I listened to the most recent episode today on the way home from work. And I really, really like it because I don't know if you know this or not, but my kids, we do almost everything online. The only thing we don't do online is Saxon math. Everything else is online in one form or fashion, whether it be reading an audio book or reading a digital book or, you know, something like that, where everything is online. And so I really like your podcast because it helps me know what dangers are out there and how to protect against them. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the Wired Homeschool podcast?
Sure. So I started the Wired Homeschool in 2010, and it actually came out of another podcast that I was doing at the time called Jesus Geek, where I kind of looked at science fiction and other kind of, you know, what you would do. call, geek topics and apply my faith to it. And I started having a homeschooling portion of the podcast. And I said, you know, why don't I just break this out into an individual podcast? Because when I had originally started podcasting back in 2005, my original intention was to reach out to homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. But in 2005, there just were not enough homeschoolers out there mm-hmm. that were using podcasts. And so to get them interested was going to be a very, very tough uphill climb. And, you know, right around 2010, I really noticed that the homeschooling community was really starting to embrace the internet a lot more than it had in the past. There were the people who had been out there before, and those were the people who were really comfortable with technology and doing their research. But for the most part, most homeschoolers were not comfortable. They didn't know what kind of computer to buy. They didn't know what this social networking stuff was and how can I protect my kids and my computer and my data and things like that from online threats. So,
and there are still some homeschooler families that don't use any kind of technology at all. But I think that they are in the vast minority nowadays.
I think they are. And I think that's perfectly fine. My podcast is not out there to say, oh, you have to use social media and you have right. to use tablets and out there. It's to say, here it is. Here's how you can apply it. I mean, a lot of people don't think about how they can use Instagram or Vine as a homeschooling tool. Mm-hmm. But you can, it's a great way to do a scavenger hunt. Because you can record a bunch of little short videos or take pictures and post them to your Instagram or your Vine account, and then your kids can look at that on their tablets or their smartphones and go about their scavenger hunt. It works great in a museum or out at a park or some other historical location. So I try and look at technology and think about, how can this be applied to homeschooling? What are some of the dangers that might be involved with it? But at the same time saying, look, there is a valid use for this in homeschooling. You may not see it at first, but there really is.
So what would you say then is the future of technology as it relates to homeschoolers?
It's a great question. I think that we're going to start seeing more and more digital products available. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these traditional publishing is still viable, but I think the more that we start seeing people get interested in homeschooling, I think the more we're going to see more online products.
Sure.
And one of the things to really watch as far as what we're going to start seeing in the homeschooling community is if you look at some of these advanced high schools or advanced junior highs where they have students in them that are that excel, or there are even a lot of science focused high schools and things like that, you're going to see that they're using technology in a way that's going to start trickling down into homeschooling. And so what that means is people are going to be using Kindles more or whatever tablet of choice, most likely the Kindle, because I don't really see anyone knocking Amazon off the top spot anytime soon, although it could happen. You never know. And I think we're going to see a lot more apps that are designed specifically for home education. There are some out there that are designed for home education, but typically they are for, you know, record keeping and mm-hmm. planning and things like that. But they're not saying, here's all your curriculum. It's in this app on your iPad, and you don't need anything else. It's all right here. All your reading, all your dissections if you're taking biology, all your videos that you need for examples. It can all be in one app. And there are some
websites like that, but there's not really any apps.
There are not any apps, right. And I mean, really, the apps will probably connect to a website somewhere, sure, or an online resource.
Yeah.
But being able to actually store a lesson on your iPad and use it offline when you don't have a wireless connection or something like that. Mm-hmm. I really think education as far as homeschooling is going to go highly mobile in next 5 to 10 years. And we're already seeing it, like I said, in the RV community. I mean, these people, they're traveling constantly. They're living out of RVs, so they can't have bookshelves full of books.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the group where we're going to start seeing homeschooling curriculum companies or even app developers. They're going to start focusing on, okay, how can we address mobile education? And so some of the thoughts that I've even had is, you may have, say, a geography app, and you go to the Grand Canyon, and it's location aware. And so, you're at the Grand Canyon. Boom. Here's some lessons on the Grand Canyon.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Or you're in Washington, D.C. Here's some lessons on our government and some of the structures in Washington, D.C. that are interesting. And I really see that happening in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Boy, that's great. There's so much available now. I can't grasp the future. You have more in tune with that than I do. But I'll tell you, one of the things that I have found that has been so valuable for us, I've always struggled with our kids and teaching them vocabulary. And then I came across vocabulary.com. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. It's just a website, yes, but it's interactive and intuitive. So, you know, it builds upon what they already know. And they love it. And that, you know, they're even my 8-year-old is, you know, going crazy with it. And, you know, he's got 500,000 points or something now. And I mean, he's going crazy with it, and they love it. And before, it was, you know, boring, and they didn't want to study vocabulary, and what's the sense? So there's a lot of activities like that that are available online that I think are just going to be exploding in the future. So I'm with you on that.
We've been very fortunate in that all of our kids love to read. Mm. We've really encouraged reading in our family. And one of the things that we encourage our kids to do is make a vocabulary list. If you come across a word in a book that you don't understand, write it down and then learn what that word means. And so that has been extremely, extremely helpful for our kids. And
that is the best way to learn, because then you learn the word in context.
Right. And especially with the boys. And this is tough. When we first started taking our boys to the library, all they wanted to do was get comics and graphic novels, right?
Yep.
But listen, it's a gateway, it's a doorway.
Sure.
So we go to the library and we say, okay, we're gonna check out 5 books. And maybe the first 2 or 3 trips, we say, you can check out 4 comics or graphic novels, but you have to get 1 nonfiction book. Mm-hmm. And then we slowly ramp that down to where we're saying, okay, 2 graphic novels and comic books. You got to get 2 nonfiction books, and then you can get another, you know, novella or short story or something like that.
Right.
And so we're really trying to stretch their ideas of reading and their palette for reading. And it can be tough sometimes because, I have teenage daughters, and they want to read these young adult novels.
Sure.
And which, I mean, there's so many of them out there, and they have more time to read than mom and dad do.
Right.
You know, so you're going through these books and you're reading them, and you can look up online all these reviews of books.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, for us, the most important thing isn't whether or not the content is okay for them. I mean, we want to make sure that the content is okay, but is the writing good? Mm-hmm. And most of these reviews don't tell you if the writing is good.
Right.
And so that is one of the things where, I mean, I just finished going through about half of Divergent. I had one daughter who was interested in reading Divergent. Mm-hmm. And my biggest complaint is that the writing's not that good.
Right, yeah. You know, yeah.
Is there some content in there that is questionable? Yes. But most importantly, the writing isn't good. And exactly. Like I said, we're looking at academic excellence here. Mm-hmm. And so we try and stretch our kids and encourage them to read books that are well written and that will expand their minds, even sure. if it is fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. This is kind of off the wall. It's more of a personal question than anything else, but how do you balance in your own home there? How do you balance the incessant desire by the children to be on electronics all the time with other things?
Well, we have for years had rules and boundaries set up in our house around electronics. Mm-hmm. And so the kids have a set amount of time of play time that they're allowed every day based on their age, that they get to use the computer to play games or whatever. And that's it. And when you set that expectation early on, when they're first starting to use a computer, then it really sticks with them as they get older and they know. I mean, we have an egg timer right here, you know, that is right next to the computer. And so they know, they come, they sit down at the computer, they set it to the amount of time that they're allowed to use, and they know they have to stop when the timer goes off. And every once in a while they say, "Hey Dad, can I finish this game? I've almost conquered this level, Dad. Can I finish this game?" And, you know, we'll give them another, you know, 5 minutes or so if it's appropriate, if there's not much else going on the day. But I think setting those limitations early is the key, and getting them used to those limitations is really the key, because we still have six kids in the house. Mm-hmm. So if we have six kids use the computer back to back for half an hour each, it's 3 hours of computer time.
Right.
And then they want to stand around and watch each other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And so a rule in our house is, if you stand and watch someone play a video game,
It counts towards your time.
Right. I mean, if I turn around right now, I've got four laptops back here because every kid needs to get onto the internet at some time during the day. And sometimes they need to do it at the same time. Now, for educational purposes, we don't really limit that. If they come to us and say, "Hey, can we go to somedog.com?" then we'll let them go to somedog.com.
Yeah.
Or if they want to go to some other educational site. We've done something similar
with ours, in that, you know, we have a time limit for them when they're doing just entertainment type things on the internet. And then we tell them if it's production or instruction, there's no time limit. But that's sometimes hard to determine. Like when my young boy wants to do stop motion with his Legos, does that count as production or does that count as play, you know?
Right, exactly.
So that's part of parenting, I suspect. But
that is
be with us now. Technology is not going away, so we got to embrace it somehow.
Yeah.
So what is one resource that you would say is something that would be of extreme value to most any homeschooling family?
One of them that I've been promoting recently is iParent.tv. And this is a website that was started by Craig Gross, who also started XXXChurch.com. If you're not familiar with them, they are, you know, maybe your listeners aren't. They are an anti-pornography ministry. And one of the things that's unique about their outreach is they're not targeted just at Christians. Mm-hmm. So that's really unique about their outreach. Whereas where you have someone like Covenant Eyes, that most of their target audience is Christian audience, XXX Church is not. And so iParent.tv, one of the things that they do is some of these websites and these apps and things like that, they give you the information about the app. They don't make a judge. I mean, occasionally you'll hear someone say, "Nah, your kids shouldn't be on this. You know, if mm-hmm. they've got this app installed, then you really need to have a conversation with your kids." But most of the time they say, you know, "Here's the information and here's what you need to know to make a decision on whether or not your kids should have this app or should use this website." And It's very non, they're very non-technical in their explanations, which is what I really like, and which is why that is the one thing that I'm recommending right now, because most of the questions that I get from homeschoolers isn't what's the best homeschooling site. It's
right.
How do I figure out what is this okay? Is that okay? Is this going to be safe for my kids? Mm-hmm. And so this is a great, great resource that parents can use.
Oh, that's good. Okay, excellent. And what kind of advice would you give a family just starting off in homeschooling?
I think the number one thing that I would tell them, if they're just starting out, you know, more than likely they have their child is 4 or 5 years old. And if they're starting out with a young child and they're just starting homeschooling, is, and really for the first year or two, don't spend any money on curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the library, check out books. I mean, your homeschooling curriculum can be pretty much free for the first 2 or 3 years of homeschooling. You should not have to go out and buy anything. If you give your children focused attention, they will pick stuff up. If when you're at the grocery store, you're showing them how to make change. If when you go to the library, you're teaching them how to look at how the books are arranged alphabetically on the shelves, they are going to learn that. They're going to pick it up because they're going to get various different ways of learning a particular concept. And, I mean, hands-on is really important at this age. And worksheets and worrying about whether or not your kid has mastered cursive by the third grade is really secondary to instilling a love of learning in them.
I
think that's really the key. And if you make learning exciting to them when they're young, it'll be exciting to them as they get older. And that's one of the cool things. Like even just tonight, I was on the Weather Channel checking out what the weather's going to be like, and I saw this video about how in Antarctica there are these volcanic steam vents, and when the steam comes out, it freezes into a chimney of ice. I mean, it just goes out, and they watched this video like 5 times in a row. It was just a little 2-minute video, but they thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah.
And it's making learning exciting, finding these opportunities to make learning exciting. Now, if you have an older child and you're transitioning from private or public schooling, my advice would be then that you need to make every opportunity to let them get together with their friends that they made in school. Because one of the things that you're going to be taking away from them is a social aspect. Mm-hmm. Homeschoolers homeschool because of socialization issues. And the last thing you want to do is make your kids resent the fact that you pulled them out of school and away from all their friends.
Right.
Now, granted, if it's a situation where you moved and you decided, hey, we're in a new location, we're in a homeschool now, that's a different situation. yeah. That's a different situation than if you're taking them out of school. And try not to do it in the middle of a school year if you can. I mean, if there's a situation, I mean, there are some situations I'm sure that parents face where they say, we just have to take our child out of school right now because it's not working. Then do the best you can to soften the blow of them, because they're used to being around their friends all day long, 5 days a week.
Right.
And now they're not going to be. Mm-hmm. And that's a big gap for them. You know, it's been a very important thing in their lives. And so it's important to give them every opportunity to get back to stay in touch with those friends, I think.
Yeah, that's good. Well, we're almost out of time, John, but two more questions. One is just real quickly, tell about the – I think you've got like a news podcast or news blog or something too that you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's Homeschool News Today. It's over at homeschoolnewstoday.com, and that is a site where I put up news articles that are, you know, encouraging and entertaining and informative about homeschooling. What you're not going to see there is the craft of the week or this curriculum is on sale. It's actual news. So yeah, if there's a homeschool football team that is excelling and it's in the news, that'll be there. If
John
there's
Doe just won the spelling bee, that kind of stuff.
Right, that kind of stuff. Exactly. And I wanted to make it as non-promotional as possible and just really look at kind of the success stories of homeschooling, yeah, which is what a lot of this is. And it's great to see how different co-ops are forming in different states and how people are responding to Common Core and going to homeschooling and switching to homeschooling. I'm doing my best to keep it all positive. I don't really – every once in a while I'll put up an article that's, you know – if a homeschooling family was, you know, had their rights violated, every once right. in a while I'll put that up there. But I try and stay away from that because most of those articles tend to be very sensational. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather report on it after everything has been settled
sure.
than deal with the sensationalism, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's good. That's a good call. So if someone wants to find out more about you and your homeschooling and the Wired homeschool and all this kind of stuff, how's the best way for them to connect with you?
For the Wired Homeschool, just head on over to thewiredhomeschool.com and you can find the blog and the podcast over there. And homeschoolnewstoday.com as well to check out all the news articles.
Okay, excellent. I should have those in the show notes as well. So you should be able to just go right from this show and click on the links right over there, or just do as he said and go right directly to there, either one. And I really appreciate you being on with me today, John, and I wish you the best with your homeschooling journey and your continued efforts at working with the community and contributing to them.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information about what was covered in this show, as well as all the other shows, go to homeschoolhope.com.